This week's Greg Ratliff podcast is a special rebroadcast of the Memphis Sports Report, which aired on KWAM The Voice in Memphis on January 19th, talking a little bit about the NFC and AFC championship games, a little bit of Memphis Grizzlies, Memphis Tigers, and I'll even touch on the LSU-Clemson National Championship game a little bit. So without further ado, here's this week's Greg Ratliff podcast, a special edition of the Memphis Sports Report.
The Memphis Sports Report.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Memphis Sports Report countdown to the championship edition for this week and the next several weeks heading up to the big football championship game. I am your host, Greg Ratliff, here on KWAM, The Voice, FM 107.9 and AM 990. You can stream the show live at kwamthevoice.com through our app, which is available in the App Store, Google or iOS, or through any of your other favorite radio streaming platforms. Of course, the game of local interest, the AFC Championship game, is going on right now, and the Kansas City Chiefs have all but wrapped this game up. It is currently fourth down and six for the Tennessee Titans with 1:32 left in the fourth quarter, trailing the Chiefs 35-24. So the Kansas City Chiefs have all but wrapped up their bid to go on to the Super Bowl. And of course, we've got one more game coming up today. It's Conference Championship Sunday in the NFL. Over in the NFC side, the Green Bay Packers will be taking on the San Francisco 49ers coming up in about 32-ish minutes. So we've got that coming up in a little bit, but the big thing going into this AFC Championship game was Derrick Henry and the kind of tear he was on, almost 1,300 yards over the last eight games, a near record stretch. I think it was third or fourth most yards over that similar kind of a stretch in NFL history. So far today, the Chiefs have held Derrick Henry to only 69 yards, which breaks a streak of Henry's as well, because every game that Henry had gotten over 100 yards rushing, they had won recently. So the Chiefs found a way. They stopped Derrick Henry. Some questionable play calling as well today. A lot more passing than we've seen out of the Titans lately. But again, you're playing a team like the Kansas City Chiefs that likes to air the ball out, score quickly. You've got to try to match. When you get into a game where you're trying to match score for score with the Kansas City Chiefs, it's just not easy to do. So as you see, the Titans are down 35-24, 1:20 left in that game now. And Kansas City just took over the ball, and they are running out the clock. So that game is pretty much over. So you've got the Kansas City Chiefs moving on to the Super Bowl to take on the winner of the Packers 49ers matchup that starts here in just a little over a half hour. Ryan Tannehill today, 21-31, 209 yards and two touchdowns for the Tennessee Titans. As I said, Derrick Henry only 69 yards on 19 carries, one touchdown. The receiving leader for the Titans, Corey Davis, five receptions for 65 yards. Over on the other side of the ball, Patrick Mahomes for the Kansas City Chiefs, 23-35, 294 yards and three touchdowns. Mahomes is actually the rushing leader for the team, too. They haven't rushed the ball a lot. He has eight carries and 53 yards with one touchdown. Sammy Watkins, over 100 yards receiving. He had seven receptions for 114 yards with one touchdown. Kansas City, 27 first downs to only 20 for the Tennessee Titans. Here's the thing, passing first downs, 14-13, Kansas City with the lead there. Rushing first downs, 10 rushing first downs, only four for the Tennessee Titans, which had been a big part of their offense, the rushing game, and Kansas City neutralized that today. Total yards, 404 for Kansas City and 295 for the Titans. Both teams, nine drives in the game. Tennessee only averaged 5.1 yards per play, which is definitely down a bit from where they've been. Only 85 yards total rushing for the Titans today in the loss to 112 for Kansas City. penalties, I mean, penalties did hurt the Titans a bit. And there was a drive towards the end of the game where they could have, they had just scored a touchdown to cut it to 11. They'd gotten the ball back to, Kansas City had gotten the ball back and was trying to drive down the field and put the game out of reach. And there was a defensive pass interference call and a long play down the field, which all but sealed the deal for the Kansas City Chiefs. Turnovers today, no turnovers for either team, no fumbles. There was almost an interception early in the game. Ryan Tannehill almost threw a pick, but the ball bounced on the ground before being caught. So no touchdown, no turnovers, no defensive, no special teams turnovers. The Titans actually controlled the clock in the game with a slim 20-second advantage, 30 minutes, 10 seconds to 29:50 for the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City moves on to the Super Bowl. Tennessee Titans' dream run here in the playoffs after defeating the Ravens and Patriots is done. So Patrick Mahomes gets that proverbial like monkey off his back, chip on his shoulder, whatever you want to call it. He gets to the Super Bowl. And then moving on over to the other side in the NFC, the Packers are heading into San Francisco. The Niners will actually, if they make it to the Super Bowl, they'll be the second team in NFL history to make the Super Bowl after losing at least 12 games a season before, which last year they went 4-12 after Jimmy Garoppolo got injured, which enabled them to draft Nick Bosa, number 2 overall in the draft, who's one of the best defensive ends in the NFL. And the defense has turned into gone from being awful last season to being one of the best in the NFL this season. The Packers, no slouches themselves. They're 14-3 this season, but they went 6-9-1 last season, which led to their head coach Mike McCarthy getting fired. The new coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy, Matt LaFleur messed around with the offense, and they brought in some big people like Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith, both people on the defensive side of the ball, who combined for 25.5 sacks this season, which is a big difference for the Packers this year. And there's a little bit of precedence in this game where the two teams played earlier in the season in Week 12. It was kind of a lopsided game, honestly. Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers quarterback, lost a fumble on the first possession, setting up a 2-yard touchdown drive that put San Francisco in the lead. And then they had some long touchdown passes in the second quarter and early in the third. And they went on to beat the Packers 37-8 in that game. It was the worst day of Rodgers' career statistically, only averaging 3.2 yards per attempt, and he got sacked 5 times by that awesome San Francisco defense. So obviously, they know what they need to do against this Packers team. You've got to get up on them and stay on them and get in Rodgers' way by rushing the passer, deflecting passes, just not letting the Packers get rolling. Because when the Packers get momentum going, they're a tough, tough team. And Rodgers is probably going to have to air the ball out a lot today. And you've got people like Richard Sherman out there on the defense. But the fun thing is the guy over on the other side, the other corner, you know, people try to avoid Richard Sherman a lot because Sherman is just a shutdown corner. The big thing is Akilah Witherspoon, the other cornerback for the 49ers, he's allowed all 5 touchdown passes given up by San Francisco in the past 3 games. It was actually benched last week for Emmanuel Mosley after getting beat for a 41-yard touchdown by Stephon Diggs. They haven't really said what the plan is for today, whether they're going to let Mosley back in there or if it's going to be Witherspoon starting opposite Richard Sherman. But you know that Rodgers isn't going to throw to Sherman. Sherman's way too good. And you've got to think that they'll try to pick on Witherspoon or Mosley, depending on which one is over there on that side. Another interesting note about this game, these two franchises have combined for 9 Super Bowl titles. This will be their 8th meeting in the past 25 years in the postseason, which is 3 more than any other rivalry. In fact, this is according to ESPN, the only other matchup to occur more often in the playoffs is Cowboys-Rams, which happened 9 times. Green Bay, in those 7 previous postseason meetings in the past 25 years, Green Bay has a 4-3 advantage in those. But the Niners have won the last 2 in 2012 and after the 2012 and 2013 seasons in the playoffs. So Kansas City's already in the Super Bowl. Now we're just kind of waiting to see whether it's going to be the Niners or the Packers. Me personally, it's got to be the Niners. The Packers, and you might say I'm a little biased. I am a Bears guy. I grew up in the Chicago area. I love my Bears. So I guess in a way I'm slightly biased. I love, I don't mind seeing the Packers lose. But I think putting all that aside, I don't think the San Francisco 49ers are going to go down in this game. They've been too good on the defensive side of the ball. And I really, really think that Jimmy Garoppolo is due to people kind of doubt Garoppolo and whether he's, you know, ready for this kind of a moment, or if, you know, I think they proved last week that they have got it, and they can dominate this Green Bay Packers team, as you saw earlier in the season with that hugely lopsided game. So I think you're going to see 49ers and Chiefs, which should be an amazing game. That 49ers defense going up against that stout offense of the Kansas City Chiefs. But right now, we're going to step out for a moment, come back and talk some Tigers. We've got Joe Mullinax from Grizzly Bear Blues coming up at the bottom of the hour to talk a little bit about what's going on with the Grizzlies. They're on a 7-game win streak right now, your Memphis Grizzlies. So we'll step out for a moment, get a couple ads going, and we'll be back right here in a moment on the Memphis Sports Report on KWAM, FM 107.9 and AM 990.
Is anyone up for a game of basketball? The Memphis Sports Report.
All right, welcome back to the Memphis Sports Report here on KWAM, The Voice, FM 107.9 and AM 990 Talk Radio for the Mid-South. Coming up in a little bit, going to talk to Joe Mullinax, the site manager for Grizzly Bear Blues, about the big win streak the Grizzlies are on. Also on a win streak, your Memphis Tigers, winners of two straight. They haven't played a lot lately. They did lose last week to Wichita State, but they maintained most of their rank. They only dropped one spot in the rankings from 21 to 22 after losing to Wichita State. They took on Cincinnati earlier this week and got a big victory, 60 to 49, after putting up a lot of points in the second half. DJ Jeffries had 18 points for the Tigers. Precious Achiuwa had 12 points and 11 rebounds. Lester Quinones had 13, 7 of which came in the final 5 minutes, as the Tigers broke a 6-game losing streak to the Bearcats, going back a couple seasons there. Memphis scored 10 straight points to take the lead, as Cincinnati managed only one field goal, a three-pointer right towards the end of the game, over the final 4 minutes and 34 seconds of that game. Like I said, Memphis only dropped one spot in last week's poll after losing to number 16 Wichita State. The Tigers should maintain their spot. If they do drop, I can't see it being more than maybe one spot, since they didn't have any games this weekend. They don't play again until Tulsa, where they hit the road to go to Tulsa and take on the Roughnecks there. I think now it's about time to let's listen to Coach Hardaway's post-game press conference after the big win against Cincinnati on Thursday night.
Obviously, a great win for a young team, a veteran team like Cincinnati coming in with some definitely really good pieces that could hurt you. Obviously, we all know Jaron Cumberland, the reigning player of the year in our league last year, was going to come in knowing that he was playing against freshmen. Knew he was going to come out with aggression from the beginning, and the way the kids responded was phenomenal. And to get this win on national TV was definitely gratifying, because we lost our last game on national TV at home against Georgia, and just happy to get back on the winning track.
Coach, you got the win, but how close did they stick to the game plan you gave? And how? What was the key to not falling down early, like behind?
Well, I think that it's funny because Mike and I always look at each other. The very first play of the game, we didn't do the game plan properly. It was like, with young kids, it's going to happen. So we're coaching our butts off. Every huddle, we're reminding them. But for the most part, I say we did the game plan about 60% of the time today, because they run pick and rolls. They're great at what they do. They made adjustments. We made adjustments, but we just kept fighting. We kept scrapping, and did a phenomenal job on that team.
Given what Precious has dealing with physically, how much did Malcolm, you know, help him
tonight? Malcolm helped a lot today. That's what I'm challenging him to do on the game-to-game basis. It's like you have to come out and make your presence felt defensively, offensively. A lot of people don't know that he does what he does out there on the floor. He's kind of quick. He knows how to make decisions. He can pass the basketball. And I'm happy for him because he's been waiting on a game like this to where he's out, he's touching the ball, he's making decisions, dribble handoff, screening, going to the basket. So he looked really good today. So that helped pressures a lot by having Malcolm out there with him today doing that.
It felt like you guys really handled the physicality pretty well, and that's not something that you would necessarily expect from a young team. So what did you just kind of make of how your team handled Cincinnati's physicality? Because that's their brand of basketball.
Yeah, for sure. We played in enough games where teams have tried to beat us up. None like Cincinnati, because that's their whole deal, is to beat you up and grind you out. And the team was up for it. We had to protect home court. We had to hit first and keep punching, because we knew if we didn't, they were going to make a run like they did. But we withstood that run. But I'm proud of the team for not bailing out and not allowing their physicality to push us back. We kept moving forward.
Penny, you mentioned, you know, you and Mike early in the game kind of looked at each other. There are moments when it's clicking with this team, it really clicks.
Yes.
And then there's moments when it looks, you know, just totally out of sync.
Right.
How are you handling just the yourself just in the game, the highs and lows, the highs and lows that this team can give you?
Yeah, well, obviously the highs, you're like, wow, we look really good. And then the lows, you see exactly what it is. This might be one guy not moving fast enough. It might be two guys ball watching. I see it all, but I'm handling it pretty well because I know we're a young team. You watch film and you want them to carry it over, and it's just not happening as fast as we want it to, but we're building. It's not all bad, believe me, but when we go through the lows, it's pretty low. But when we go through the highs, it's really high. So for a young team, we have way more highs than our lows.
13 shots tonight. Does that qualify as Gunner DJ for you?
Yes, that's what we want, and he made 6 of them. 4 for 10 from 3. He comes out aggressive. That helps us. 18 points. Come on, plus 16. We need DJ to be aggressive like that as every game.
Hey, Coach, this is probably the most physical game.
That's head coach of the Memphis Tigers, Penny Hardaway, talking after the game Thursday night against Cincinnati, which the Tigers won 60-49. He was talking there about DJ Jeffries, who, like I said just a moment ago, DJ had 18 points for the Tigers in that 60-49 victory. Coming up here in just a couple minutes, Joe Mullinax from Grizzly Bear Blues will be joining the program to talk all about Ja Morant fever and how it has swept the Memphis area. We'll be back here in just a couple minutes on the Memphis Sports Report here on FM 107.9 and AM 990. KWAM, the voice in the Memphis Sports Report. Welcome back into the Memphis Sports Report here on KWAM, the voice, FM 107.9 and AM 990. We'll recap the national championship game between LSU and Clemson at the end of the show. But first, we're going to get into some NBA talk with the site manager from Grizzly Bear Blues on SB Nation, the one and only Joe Mullinax. Joe, how are you?
One and only is probably a good thing, man. I got to be honest with this. I feel like I start flame wars every day on Twitter.com and at our blog, GrizzlyBearBlues.com. So probably a good thing there's only one me. I appreciate you bringing me on to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies that have suddenly all, at least when it comes to me interacting with other people, you know, I'm the biggest hater on the planet.
Yeah, apparently being you're just so negative about the Grizzlies and their playoff chances this season.
Right.
And you don't want to trade Jay Crowder. You don't want to don't want to mess up the system too much, right?
Oh, good Lord! I don't know what else to say about that stuff. You know, it even advanced today to people defending Solomon Hill. The only reason Solomon Hill is in Memphis is because he's not Chandler Parsons and he's better than Miles Plumlee. That's why he's there. And people, oh, you don't want to mess it up. He's an important rotation piece. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that. I think that people like to say that they don't have expectations because it makes them sound smart and like they're patient and that they're playing both ends of the spectrum. But when you say things like that, you are showing that you do have playoff expectations because you don't want to throw off the chemistry of a potential playoff team. Like, who in their right mind thinks that Solomon Hill is vital to the playoff chemistry of the Memphis Grizzlies?
I think people that don't watch basketball, maybe?
I don't. Maybe you make an argument for Jay Crowder, but from a basketball standpoint, Jay Crowder is second on the team in three-point field goal attempts and 10th on the team among the rotation players, the 11 guys who are in the rotation, and 10th in percentage. He's only better than Kyle Anderson, who's never been a three-point shooter, and he is, I did the math earlier today, because somebody was like, oh, well, what about the second half of the season so far where he's done, you know, the last 20 games? He's 30 for 120, 25%. He's actually worse from three than he was during the first half of the, or the first quarter, I guess I should say, of the season, Jay Crowder is. So I don't get it. Why have you shifted? Why do you think this guy who, in a system that is so vital for three-point shooting and spacing, he's one of the worst ones on your team at it, and he takes the second most shots? Why are you so driven by Solomon Hill and Jay Crowder? I don't understand how you can argue that if Justin Jackson of the Dallas Mavericks and a second-round pick is on the table from the Mavs and they want Jay Crowder, how you don't pull the trigger on that blows my mind. I don't get it.
Do you think it's a case of, you know, because the Grizzlies fans over the years, and I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus that might be listening that's a Grizzlies fan. I'm not doing that at all. I'm just saying, do you think that maybe our fan base here in Memphis has a habit of just kind of latching on to personalities and players more so than the actual on-court performance and the person themselves?
Well, and I think in fairness to Memphis, that is fandom in general. And okay. One of the things I've noticed in my experience running the blog is technically we're a fan blog, right, over at grizzlybearblues.com. But the unique thing about us, at least in my perspective, is we are a national fan blog. Like, we are a part of the SB Nation network. So to me, we owe our fans a bit of decorum when it comes to covering the team. We're not full-blown media members, but I do think just to be fanboys and girls who follow along with the team and blindly support whoever's wearing the jersey and not being able to criticize when performance is bad or acknowledge that there's opportunity to improve the roster via a trade, I just really struggle with folks that don't perceive it or see it that way. And that doesn't make me a bad fan. I mean, I haven't lived in Memphis for 6 years, and I still pay the $200-whatever it is to watch League Pass. I still follow the team and write 200-plus articles a year about the team from afar. Like, my fandom shouldn't be any lesser than anybody else's just because I perceive the organization in a different way than they do. And I think that that's something that we walk the line at Grizzly Bear Blues of media and fan, and I think that that is not always appreciated or attractive to some folks in the fan base. So in fairness to Memphians, I think that most fans do what they do. It's just that when it comes to basketball in the city of Memphis, as you well know, that's a pretty strong passion, and that emotion just comes out a little more strongly, perhaps.
We're talking to Joe Mullinex, the site manager for Grizzly Bear Blues on the SB Nation network of sites. You can find him on Twitter. You're at Joe Mullinex, correct, on Twitter?
That is correct. That's me. Yeah, shockingly, there's no Joe Mullinex is on Twitter already.
So speaking of the playoffs, the Grizzlies are currently, locked into the eighth seed in the playoffs at a 20-22 record. Do you think that the Grizzlies being in the playoffs is more indicative of how well they've played, or is it more of the Western Conference kind of not being as good after you get below about the top four seeds this season?
It's shades of gray. I think that you have to acknowledge that Memphis is playing really well right now, and there's no doubt that, especially within this winning streak, their offensive production matches the level of the 2014 through 2018 Golden State Warriors. Like, that's not hyperbole. The last 7 games that they've won, that is true. So the fact that they're playing that well, A, isn't sustainable, and anybody that says it is, in terms of three-point shooting especially, is kidding themselves and setting themselves up for disappointment. And B, is something that nobody expected, right, at this point of the rebuild. So you're definitely further along than you thought you would be. I mean, they're 8 games away, essentially, from beating the over. I think they were at 20, or it was like 27.5 wins with the prediction from Vegas for their wins this season. They might get that before the All-Star break. I'd have to double check how many games there are before the All-Star break. But certainly in the month of February, it's possible they get the over, you know, that soon. So I do think the playoffs, it's a combination. There hasn't been a team that's made the playoffs with a losing record in the Western Conference in over 2 years. So I think that needs to be acknowledged. Like, the West is bad at the bottom. But at the same time, Memphis has gotten hot at a good time. They are set up really nicely. They have lots of tradable assets, whether it's expiring contracts, draft picks, you know, the combination of the two, of course. And they have Ja Morant, who looks the part of the next great superstar in the NBA. And they have Jaren Jackson Jr., who looks the part of the guy who gets overshadowed by the first guy, but you could argue is a better two-way player. I mean, Ja still has his flaws defensively, whereas Jaren, especially during the midst of this winning streak, has rediscovered what makes him so tantalizing as a defensive player, and he's dominating on both ends of the floor. So when you have those two guys in the fold and they're on rookie contracts, you obviously have restricted free agency for their next contract, the max that they'll certainly get. You know, Grizzlies fans have a right to be excited. The next, you know, at least 7 years or so appear to be pretty bright, because the chances, I mean, any offer that those two guys get in restricted free agency, Memphis can match, and they've set themselves up to be able to max out both of those guys and keep them around without having any luxury tax concerns. It's just been really impressive by Wexler and Kleiman and company, the way that they've built the organization and reset it, essentially. Of course, a little bit of luck moving up to number two overall in the draft this past draft certainly helps. But they've really done a good job finding themselves in a place where they can pursue the playoffs without compromising their future. And I think that's where a lot of fans are struggling right now. You know, trading Jay Crowder, trading Solomon Hill, you know, Andre Iguodala and Josh Jackson, they're not really a part of the organization, at least the Grizzlies side of things. Obviously, Jackson plays for the Hustle. But you don't really see those two guys, if they get traded or released or whatever, that's fine. But when you start talking about guys like Jay Crowder, who leads the team in minutes for this season, you know, that's a pretty massive move. If you do make that change, it disrupts the rotation pretty considerably. Even more so than Hill. So I understand that, but I also, if I'm being honest, don't really care in a season that they're not supposed to make the playoffs anyway. The fact they're in this conversation is not because they are some elite team, or at least over the span of the last 42 games. It's because the Western Conference has been that bad, especially at the bottom, of course.
Talking to Joe Mullinax from SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues. From looking at the schedule here, it looks like there's 12 games before the All-Star break, 9 games before the trade deadline. So after that February 6th trade deadline, what's the ideal situation for the Grizzlies to be in your eyes?
In my eyes, I think the ideal situation is to trade every expiring contract they have. That's Josh Jackson. That's Andre Iguodala. That is Jay Crowder, and that is Solomon Hill. And I don't think all four of them will be moved or released in the case of Josh Jackson. It's very possible they just waive him after a 2-for-1 or something along those lines. But to me, you're looking for pieces that are long-term going to fit around Jaren and Ja. And I understand that Jay has done a good job helping establish that bulldog mentality. He's a competitor. You see that in the way that he plays. But at the same time, he's not necessarily a fit long-term, and the roster also has a lot of guys that are like Jay Crowder. So if they decide to stick with Jay and maybe hope to re-sign him to a 2 or 3 year deal this free agent or this summer, excuse me, you know, does that mean they move on from a Kyle Anderson who has 3 years left on his contract, is not much of a shooter, and also obviously given his rate of play, not the biggest fast paced type of guy, he has kind of fallen out of the rotation. You know, he looks like he's the 11th man on some nights. Are you going to pay $9 or $10 million to the 11th man? So I do think that there's going to be some moves made. It's probably not going to be the ones that I want them to. It rarely is. But at the same time, I do believe that you'll see Andre Iguodala traded. You know, if it comes down to the 11th hour and Courtney Lee and 2 second-round picks from Dallas is the best offer you have, they'll take that. It doesn't make sense to have Iguodala on your roster and not at least get a couple more assets out of it when you know there's a market for him. Josh Jackson, I think, will probably not be on the roster much longer. I could see him being the victim of a 2-for-1 waiving or even a trade if somebody wants to take a bite at him. It's just, if they wanted Josh Jackson, he would have already been up with the team. You know what I'm saying? So I don't necessarily see a window where he comes up to the Grizzlies this year and makes an impact. I think he's not in the long-term plans. And like I said, Solomon Hill is here because he's not Chandler Parsons and he's better than Miles Plumlee. So if somebody throws you a second-round pick and an expiring deal or a young player for Solomon Hill, you jump on that immediately. Crowder's probably the biggest question at this point. And maybe Hill will be on the roster just because there won't be a deal worthy of moving on from him.
Why do you think that Josh Jackson hasn't been given a shot up here with the big team?
You hear rumbles about things that he does. And obviously it goes back to Phoenix and the way, you know, whenever you're accused of getting a baby high, you know, that's not the best thing. And, you know, whether that's true or not, there's lots of, there's lots of the proverbial, and it's, I guess, fitting here, pun not intended, where there's smoke, there's fire. How seriously he's taking his NBA career. And you hear, like I said, murmurs of whether it's the late meeting with the Memphis Hustle. It just seems like he doesn't take seriously enough what his opportunity is with the NBA. And they were hoping that maybe this would reignite that or wake him up to the fact that you could very well be out of the NBA soon. And maybe they're just not seeing enough to warrant them moving on from, somebody in the rotation that they value, like a Grayson Allen or a Kyle Anderson. Or, you know, you can't play a 12-man rotation. So you're looking at moving on from somebody who you do find value in and is doing things the way you want them to do them and has not really done the stuff in the past that Josh Jackson has, like D'Anthony Melton. D'Anthony Melton was the prize piece of that trade all along. Josh Jackson was the guy that they moved to get the money straight. So I don't necessarily see Josh having a future with the organization now because he would have already been called up if there was one. There's no reason for him to not be with the Grizzlies unless they don't see him as a long-term part of the plan. And, they didn't pick, obviously he doesn't have the team option. He's an unrestricted free agent this upcoming offseason. He has a ton of talent and he has the look of an NBA player. You watch the Hustle play. And he looks out of place a lot of times because he's so good physically. But if it's not there mentally and if it's not there in terms of the makeup professionally of what you want an NBA player to look like, then you don't want to inject that into an organization that is so young like the Grizzlies are. So I think that's it. I don't see them thinking he's worthy of investment because he's not prioritizing his professional career, if that makes sense.
No, that makes complete sense. That's a perfectly fair thing to say. One thing that kind of hit the basketball Twitter landscape this week was Bradley Beal, more specifically an athletic article that said, Bradley Beal is angry and the Wizards better find out why and fix it immediately. And perhaps fixing that means moving him elsewhere. And the Grizzlies, not even just from people on with Grizzly Bear Blues, but I saw it once or twice other people kind of mentioning that could be a fun spot to put Bradley Beal with John Morant and Jaren Jackson. Do you think that the Grizzlies could be a suitor for Bradley Beal this offseason?
Potentially. I think that where people struggle with all the asset acquisition that we talk about, the one thing that's been proven true over the history of the Memphis Grizzlies organization is that big-time free agents aren't coming there unless you overpay them or you trade for them. Chandler Parsons is the biggest free agent Memphis has ever signed. Hindsight is 20/20 on that, and obviously it didn't work out. But when the signing occurred, you go back and look at free agency lists from 2016, Chandler Parsons was top 10 to 15 on every single list. And he was the biggest guy that Memphis ever brought in. And they had to overpay for him. And obviously it didn't work, but it was something that they had to do for a variety of reasons that have already been fleshed out between Mike Conley meeting with Dallas at roughly the same time. You know, there's all sorts of reasons why Parsons is here, or was here, excuse me. And you can't take that risk anymore, except for the next 2 years, because money isn't really an object the next 2 years because Jaren and Ja are on those rookie deals. You know, you got to worry about a Jaren Max here around 2022 or so. I do believe that when you trade for somebody, you can get them to fall for the city. You know, Zach Randolph's a good example of that. If they're not really given the option, like they have to be traded and they have to go there, you know, they can see what a special place Memphis is. And I think that's the sweet spot. Same thing with restricted free agency. You know, you make a team decide if they're going to match a contract offer. And Malik Beasley has been a good example of that conversation. If Memphis offers a big-time number that Denver is not comfortable matching, then maybe they'll move on from him. You know, that's how Memphis got Tyus Jones. That's how Memphis got Kyle Anderson. So those are the avenues, restricted free agency or trade. And, you know, Bradley Beal, if you start with Brandon Clark and two first-round picks, and Brandon Clark's awesome, and I don't really want to trade Brandon Clark, but that type of package is one where you're acknowledging that you're ahead of schedule, and you think of Bradley Beal, who, if you've never watched Bradley Beal play, he's a perfect fit next to Jaren and Jaw. He can defend, he can facilitate, he can shoot the three at a very high level. He's essentially Ray Allen. So if you wanted Ray Allen in his peak next to Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant, there's a possibility to do it with Bradley Beal. But it's not going to be cheap. And you'd probably have to lose your prize prospect that you could theoretically move on from, Brandon Clark and a couple first-round picks, and then whatever cap money to make the trade work is probably what you're looking at. Now, is it worth it? I don't know. I don't necessarily think it is because, again, if you're looking at a long-term rebuild, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket in year two, expecting Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. to be, you know, Western Conference Finals contenders still on their rookie contracts. I think that's a bit of a reach. But at the same time, if you believe that this level of play is sustainable and you think that Bradley Beal starting next to Dylan, Ja, Jaren, and Valanciunas is a better fit that will put you in a position to compete and you want to start making that move a little sooner than anticipated, I think that deal is going to be available. I don't think Bradley Beal is untouchable at this point. And I also think he's the best fit for what Memphis is trying to do in terms of scheme. You can make an argument for Devin Booker, but I don't think Devin Booker's available. Gary Harris might be available, but he's not better than Bradley Beal. So it's a lot of a combination of fit and availability. Beal's probably your best option this summer, and it would take a lot to get him, but that's part of what being a front office head is about. You got to decide what's your organization's direction, and obviously the next 3 months or so of Grizzlies basketball will help us determine what that is. If they don't make the playoffs, if they trail off in the second half of the season and there's, you know, they settle in as a 30-52 team, then it's probably not smart to try to make that big of a jump and invest in a guy and take a gamble on him sticking around when he could just as easily Paul George you and demand a trade 2 years later after re-signing a massive contract. Or if you do consistently do what you're doing now and you somehow make the 7 or 8 seed and you push the Clippers or Lakers or Nuggets to the brink and you get to a Game 6 or a Game 7 somehow, how miraculous that would be, and you think you're one guy away, Beal will be able to be had. And I think Clark and two first-round picks is a pretty solid baseline of a deal to get to Bradley Beal. You just got to decide, is it worth it?
Wrapping things up with Joe Mullinax from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, a part of the SB Nation family of sites. Joe, for the casual Grizzlies fan that hasn't gotten a chance to really see Ja Morant in action, how special has what he's done so far been in the grand scheme of things?
He's intoxicating, and I think that's one of the reasons we talk about Grizzlies Twitter being a little bit more lit than usual. It's like a rager. You know, watching him play is like a high, and I can't really describe what that is because I've never done it, but I can only imagine that, you know, seeing him do what he does is like an adrenaline rush or, you know, being on cocaine or insert whatever a high impact life living thing, you know, good or bad for your health here is. That's what Ja Morant is. He's Penny Hardaway. He's Magic Johnson. He's a combination of those guys. And I think the best compliment that you can make to him because of how electric he is in terms of his ability to dunk, play above the rim, you know, he might be the first Ja Morant. You know, lots of folks have written about Jaren Jackson Jr. and how he compares to Chris Bosh or Kevin Garnett. And I think we need to let Jaren be the first Jaren and see if he can kind of stake his own claim as a special player. And Ja Morant could be the same deal. He has elite vision already. He has elite ability at the rim and finishing already. He can be a net defender. And I think that's the biggest thing that's holding him back is on the defensive end. As he catches up with that, you know, he will rapidly move up the list of best Grizzly basketball players of all time because of what he physically is capable of. He has that higher ceiling already because of the intangibles, because of the athleticism, all of the talent that he has gotten, it'll come down to him continuing to improve and grow his game over the next several years to see just how far he can take it. But right now, he's must-see TV, you know, more so than probably anybody in the NBA. You could argue Giannis, of course, and LeBron is a living legend at this point, and there's plenty of other talented players that you want. If you're flipping the channels and you own League Pass, you might stop and watch Luka Doncic, of course. Mm-hmm. You might stop and watch a few minutes of the game. But I feel like Ja more and more is becoming that guy that you're like, oh, Ja plays at 8. You know what I mean? Ja plays at 10 on the West Coast. I got to make sure I see parts of that game. Or at the very least, you're scrolling on social media the next day looking for the highlights of the game that Ja played the night before. Memphis hasn't ever had that. And I think that's where people, you know, in the Mike Conley debate and that sort of stuff, is he better than Mike Conley ever was right now? And, you know, I don't want to get into that absurdity. But I think the reason that's even a conversation is because of how he is different than anything Memphis has ever had. Because for the first time, it's not manufactured excitement. You know, even during the peak of grit and grind, you weren't tuning in unless you lived in Memphis to watch those guys play 87 to 82 basketball games. You just weren't. And that's part of the allure of what that era was. This is the exact opposite of that. I go back to it being an intoxicating style of play. You know, it makes you say and do and think things that maybe you wouldn't normally do, but Ja's that special. And I think that he has the potential to really drive the Memphis Grizzlies to a place they've never been before. It's going to take time, and that's been my message all along, to not force something that's not there. But with every victory, it looks more and more like they're ready to bear the brunt of that pressure.
And I would guess, you know, the Grizzlies only have 2 games on national TV the rest of the season. That's probably going to change.
Yeah, I guess a couple are going to get flexed. Yeah. That would be a safe bet for the second half of the season.
You know, one of those 2 games is tomorrow, the game against the New Orleans Pelicans for the annual MLK Day celebration. This was Joe Mullinax from SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues. Thanks for joining the program this week, Joe.
Absolutely. Happy to help you, buddy. Anytime. Happy to be on, and thank you for all the work you do.
Thank you. And check out all the great stuff they're doing over on grizzlybearblues.com. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about the national championship game that happened this past week, LSU and Clemson, and get you set up for next week's weekly Memphis Sports Report. But we'll be right back here on KWAM The Voice, FM 107.9 and AM 990.
As they say in the bayou, there's it up on top of let the good times roll. LSU sits on the throne of college football.
It's my honor to present the national championship trophy to Coach Ed Ogeron and the LSU Tigers.
The Memphis Sports Report.
Welcome back into the Memphis Sports Report as we wrap things up for this week's countdown to the football championship edition of the program. I want to briefly talk about LSU's big win this week over Clemson in the national championship college football playoff. LSU snapped Clemson's 29-game winning streak in New Orleans. The two programs both have been pretty elite. Well, honestly, LSU's been elite this season. Clemson's been pretty elite over the last several seasons. LSU's the only team other than Clemson to win 15 games. They're just the second team in the past 120 seasons of college football to win 15 games. Clemson did it last year. In the game itself, 6 of the 7 first drives were punts, 3 each for Clemson and LSU. It's the first time since November of 2018 against Alabama that LSU failed to score in its first 3 possessions. And they got down early in the game, 17-7, before coming back to win the game. Joe Burrow, in the first half, he joined Vince Young in the category of players with 250 passing yards, 50 rushing yards, and a rushing touchdown in a national championship game. And he did all of that in the first half. But let's not forget about Clemson, who going into next season has got to be one of the favorites in college football. With Trevor Lawrence coming back, and also their star running back coming back as well. Travis Etienne is coming back for his senior season, foregoing entering the NFL draft. And he's going to come back, and Clemson's going to try to do it again. Now, some people will look at this and say it could be a mistake that Etienne's coming back, but he's got a chance to do something special with Trevor Lawrence, and they might try to win 15 again this year and win another national championship and cement Clemson's legacy even further. That's it for this week's show. Next week, we'll have some more Grizzlies talk, get you all set up for the we're in the off week before the big NFL championship Super Bowl game. Big thanks to Joe Mullinax for joining the program. SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. We'll see you all next week right here on the Memphis Sports Report. And that's it for today's Greg Ratliff podcast. Look for the next episode to drop on Monday, January 27th, and hopefully every Monday after that. Y'all have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.